When I teach beginners, I tell them a little bit about what practice we do, and I explain that it comes from the teachings of the Buddha, but I explain that, you know, you don't need to be a Buddhist, and most of the people that I know who practice in this tradition aren't Buddhists or don't identify themselves as Buddhist, and I always say that the Buddha didn't teach Buddhism. You know, Buddhism, that whole notion of Buddhism didn't come until long after the Buddha. You know, the Buddha taught the Dhamma. The Buddha taught the truth. He taught about the truth so that we could understand the truth of our human experience. One of the great truths that he taught, and one of the great truths that we're asked to take in and understand in the heart, is the truth of impermanence. In the chant on impermanence that we do sometimes, it begins Anicca Vata Sankara. All conditioned things, sankaras, are impermanent. Anicca. Anicca Vata Sankara. All conditioned things are impermanent. All conditioned things are subject to birth and death. They take birth, eventually they die. All conditioned things are subject to change. The conditions of the world are in a continual process of change, continual flux, the experiences of the world, just like our experiences today on this retreat. You know, we didn't have one experience on this retreat, right? You had an ongoing succession of many, many, many different kinds of experiences. If you really look closely at what happens, you see that. We tend to have a real tunnel vision. We fixate on certain things, and we think, well, that's my experience, but our experience is so various and variable. So things are in an ongoing process of change. Things arise, change, and pass. This is the way things are. This is the great truth, the natural order. So what we see in nature, right? The seasons change. The weather changes. You know, and you know, one of the things that the Buddha talked about, and you know, we often talk about, is, you know, and particularly on a retreat, you know, we should be doing it all the time because it's so important. But on a retreat, you know, we have this time to take a look and see that. So when you go outside, you know, see how things change. You know, you could get very tunnel vision about it and say, well, it's just hot. You know, I mean, in that time when you're outside, so much is happening, so much is changing. The trees are changing, every leaf is changing, the air is changing, you're changing, your body is changing. Things are in a constant, constant process of change. So we learn to pay attention to that and to see that. It's what in the teachings is called developing the Dhamma eye. You know, this is the way a Dhamma student is meant to look at his or her experience, to see that things are in this constant process of change. You know, I always like the way that Tanjev translates anicca. He doesn't usually translate it as impermanent. He translates it as inconstant. Inconstant. You know, because nothing is constant in the conditioned world. Nothing is constant. Nothing is the same from moment to moment. It's constantly changing. It's inconstant. And again, we see it in a day. We see it in the course of one day. I remember a number of years ago now, I was on a month-long retreat at Gaia House in England. And you know, on a really long retreat like that, you just get the sense of how time goes on, time goes on. It's just like day turns to night, turns to day, turns to night. You know, and it's just all that's really happening is things that are changing. You know, you're present and you're awake and things are changing, things are changing. Sometimes I would sit in the library room, which had a big, not to read books, but just to sit there and maybe I read a book or two, but there was these big windows looking out over the fields, the cow pastures in Devon, southwest England, and just watch the weather. You know, and in an hour, you know, it would be sunny, then a huge cloud formations would come in and it would rain and it would hail and it would be windy, you know, and then it would pass and it would be sunny and it'd be cloudy, you know. Now those are big changes, but you know, again, there's all these minute changes. I mean, since this sitting began, things have changed so much if we really pay attention to it. The body has changed, the mind has changed. You know, the external experience has changed. And if you really pay attention to it, your external experience, the things that you're seeing and smelling and hearing are changing. And our internal experience is changing. It's in constant flux right now. You know, the body is going through so many changes. All the different sensations, they're in constant flux. The mind, and we're talking about mind here, we're talking about the thinking mind, the emotional mind, you know, the mind is in constant flux of change. In fact, the Buddha, who was considered a master of the metaphor, you know, said that the Buddha was a genius at metaphor. He said, to draw, make his point, he said, the mind changes so fast, I can't come up with a metaphor. You know? That's how fast it changes. Even I can't come up with a metaphor for how fast the mind changes. Sometimes when we look at the truth of change, we consider the modes of change, or the eight worldly conditions, the loka dhamma, the ways, loka, the world, the ways of the world. Things are in this constant process, fluctuation between pleasure and pain, gain and loss, status and disrepute, praise and blame. And it just really kind of goes back and forth, back and forth. If you look at your experience today, pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain. And one of the real facets that we're asked to understand as we develop this understanding of inconstancy is that to a large extent things are out of our control. You know, to a large extent things are out of control. I mean, the external conditions to a large extent are outside of our control. The weather, outside of our control, right? Others, other people, outside of our control. All of these experiences, so many of these experiences that we're having on the retreat are outside of your control. You know, even the experience of the food in the dining room. I mean, it's like every day it's different and you don't know what it's going to be. I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a metaphor. Out of your control. How are you going to deal with that? You know, and of course we can exert some control over our external environment, you know. You know, the weather changes, it gets hot, we can turn on an air conditioner. You know, and that's fine, climate control. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, what we can accomplish by exerting that control on the weather, by turning on an air conditioner, is really limited. It's extraordinarily limited. You know, the body is still going to be subject to hot and cold. The body is still going to be subject to a constant, ongoing fluctuation of changing experiences. You know, I always find it interesting on retreats, you know, and I mean, this has been from time immemorial, possibly, you know, probably, but the Buddha dealt with this, I'm sure. But, you know, and having run so many retreats over the years as an administrator or a leader, community leader, and as a teacher, you know, one of the big issues that people have on retreats is the weather, you know, and should we put the heater on or turn it off, or should the air conditioner go on or off? I mean, there's so much suffering that happens on retreats over the air conditioning and the heater, you know, because we're trying to control what really can't be controlled. We're trying to control what really can't be controlled. You know, of course, our internal experience, you know, is so out of, I mean, the experiences of the body are to so much of an extent out of our control. You know, starting with the big three, sickness, aging. I mean, aging's really out of your control. Death, that's really out of your control. Sickness, I mean, you have some control over it, right? You know, if you have a headache, you can take an Advil. We have that medicine cabinet. You know, we'll be happy to give you. But it, again, it's very limited what you can accomplish with all what medicine knows. The body is still going to get sick, and it's still going to die. The control we have over it is still very limited. You know, and sometimes, you know, I wonder about that control. You know, when you see somebody hooked up to machines and things like that. You know, the body on a retreat is, you know, subject, again, to all of these sensations that are about beyond our control. Right? So many things that are beyond our control. You know, the karma of the body, the way the body is. You know, the karma of the human body is pretty much out of our control. And you see that on retreat. You know, if it's with the pain or the different things that are coming up in the knees and the back. I mean, I used to struggle with that so much on retreat because particularly in my earlier years, in my younger and more vulnerable days, I'd go on retreat and I'd have a lot of pain And, you know, I might start off on the cushion and I'd start to have some knee pain and I go, this isn't working. And I'd find a bench somewhere and I'd sit on a bench. And I was like, oh no, I have pain there, a different part of my body. Let me try a chair. That would be like in one day. I'd try four of, you know, and I would go, and it was just an agony because I was trying to control something that couldn't be controlled. It was so much anguish I had over that. And then finally, I got a little bit of wisdom as time went on, and I said, you know what? You can't really control how the body is. Just choose one way to sit and deal with what comes up. And that really began to change my retreat experience greatly. The mind, as I said, is so out of our control. You know, all the thoughts and emotions that arise, you know, it's out of our control because what's arising in the mind, and we're talking about this mind, what's arising in the mind in terms of the emotions and the thinking is arising out of past karma, you know, and the changing conditions that we're experiencing in context as things, as we go through the course of our day, you know, so... You know, we've developed this karma, you know, that is, you know, the product of everything that's ever happened to us and every action that we've ever taken. You know, every time we've taken an action, like a thought action or holding on to an emotion, we've created a karma, which, you know, in part is about throwing seeds ahead of us, throwing seeds ahead of us, throwing seeds ahead of us, throwing seeds ahead of us. You don't know when those seeds are going to sprout. I mean, different seeds sprouted today, but you couldn't. There's no way. Buddha said it's inconstruable to figure out when those seeds are going to sprout. He said if you try to figure that out, you'll go mad. You know, so you just don't know what's going to arise in the mind. You don't know what's going to arise emotionally, because past karma is impossible to figure out. Impossible to figure out. You know, so you don't know what's going to arise on the mind in this retreat. I mean, you see that in a sitting, right? The stuff that arises, the emotions that come up during the course of the day. So the bottom line is, we don't know what's going to happen. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in life. We don't know what's going to happen in this retreat. We don't know what's going to happen in any sitting and in any walking. You know, we may have ideas about how things will unfold. Things rarely unfold in that way. We don't know what's going to happen on this retreat. You don't know what's going to happen from day to day, from sitting to sitting. You know, we're on a road to a goal, you know, as I talked about last night. But that road has many, many, many twists and turns. Many, many twists and turns. You know, we'd like to kind of channel our inner Robert Moses, you know, and build a causeway through, you know, the South Bronx, you know, a straight path to awakening. It ain't going to happen. That's not going to happen, you know. The road, you know, we'll get to the goal. You know, you'll get to the goal. You just don't know how you're going to get there. You just don't know how you're going to get there. And Zen has a beautiful way of talking about it. It's like the water in a river, you know. I mean, there's rocks, there's boulders, you know, and the water just goes around those things. It's not a straight path. And we'll get to the goal if we practice the way the Buddha says we should practice. You know, but the road that we're going to be taking is nothing like the road we could have imagined. You know, I would always have expectations and ideas about what would happen on retreats, and it never worked out that way. It never worked out that way. You know, because our practice is going to have these ups and downs, and to a large extent, those ups and downs are the result of our past karma. You know, and what's important in our practice, of course, is that we see that we're making progress, you know, and if we practice accordingly, according to the Buddha's instructions, we'll make progress. So we'll go from one point, say at the bottom of a graph, to that point at the top of the graph. But it's not going to be a straight line. It's going to be a jagged line on that graph. You know, we'll get to the top, but it's going to be ups and downs, ups and downs. We move forward, we move towards our goal, but it's ups and downs, ups and downs. So what does that mean? What does that mean for us in our lives? What does that mean for us on this retreat? You know, as Dharma students, we learn not to rely on things that are unreliable. We learn not to depend on things that are undependable. Instead, we learn to rely on things that are reliable. We learn to rely and depend on things that are dependable. What's dependable? What's dependable? Well, what's dependable is what's inside of ourselves, and very specifically, what's in the heart. You know, this is where we're talking about the heart and the mind, the citta. That's what's dependable. Now, that's what's constant. That's what's always there. So we learn to rely on our wisdom, you know, the wisdom of the heart. Sometimes we call it our innate wisdom. You know, this wisdom that's in all of us, that's just part of the ever-present truth. Ajahn Mun called it akaliko. It's just part of the ever-present truth. This wisdom that knows the truth. Wisdom that knows the truth. And what this wisdom, one of the things this wisdom knows unequivocally, one of the things this wisdom knows is that all conditioned things are impermanent. The heart knows that that's true, that all conditioned things are inconstant. The heart knows that that's true. It's the mind that rebels against that and says, no, I want things to be a certain way, and I want things to be constant, and I want things to, you know, always be the same. So in the face of change, inconstancy, you know, the vicissitudes of life, the ups and downs, in other words, in the face of life, in the face of retreat, you know, we turn to this wisdom. You know, we turn to the wisdom that knows that things are impermanent. We turn to the truth, the Dhamma. You know, so that can start with acknowledging, well, you know, things are impermanent, you know, and making that connection from head to heart, because the heart, the wisdom that's right here, knows that that's true. You know, after my mother died, you know, for a while, you know, there was a period when I was just really had a lot of sorrow that was, you know, this kind of real anguish and grief. And then, you know, and it was a real turning point. There was really a moment when it just clicked in, you know, the wisdom clicked in. It's like, this is the way things are. This is the truth. Life comes and goes. This is the, and it was just one of, it wasn't like I thought that. It was like, yeah, yeah, that's, and there was peace. It's like, oh, this was exactly what was supposed to happen. This was the most natural thing, probably the most natural thing that she ever did, you know? You know, it's the most natural thing, and it's beautiful, because that's the truth. And when you connect to that truth, there's just happiness there. So when you fight that truth is when there's struggle. So our goodness is what's dependable, our wisdom and the love in the heart, the metta in the heart. Now, these are the things that are ekaliko, part of the ever-present truth. They're dependable. So what we try to do is not change our experience, but meet our experience with wisdom and meet our experience with love. We seek in life and on this retreat to meet our experience as we go through this retreat with love. We can't control our experience, but we can control how we relate to it. You have control over how you relate to your experience. I mean, that was something that the Buddha came to understand. You know, you have control over how you relate to your experience. You don't have control over your experience, and you're going to suffer if you try to control it. If you let go of that control and assert the control that you have, you know, over in terms of how you relate to your experience, you'll find happiness. If you meet your experience skillfully, whatever your experience is on this retreat or in life, if you meet it with wisdom and love, you'll move toward happiness. I mean, think about what the Buddha said. You know, when we are connected, even if it's for a moment, when we're connected to love, we meet our experience, you know, something happens, you know, you get up at 6 a.m. and you put your socks on, you know, you get, it's like, I only got one sock, you know? And it's like, all right, can I meet that with love, you know? You know, and that moment when you connect into the heart, you know, as the Buddha said, and I gave that quote last night, you know, there's no greed, there's no hatred, and there's no delusion. There's no suffering. It's just happiness in those moments when we connect into the heart. You know, so, you know, when we focus on the heart, when we meet our experience with love, no matter what our experience is, there's happiness. Sickness, aging, death. And when we meet our experience with wisdom and love, there's happiness. So, you know, this is kind of an interesting phrase, to meet our experience with love. You know, because it, for me, it's always begged the question, how do you do that? You know, how do you do that? I mean, I would hear people say that, you know, and it sounded really good, but it was always a little disturbing to me because I didn't know how to do that. It seemed very abstract and beyond my ken, how I do that. And I didn't think that I had the capacity to do that. You know, people said, well, meet your experience with love, but I didn't think that that was something I could do. I thought that was for, like, you know, these spiritual athletes in the room, you know? Or maybe someday, if I was lucky, I'd be walking down the street, you know, and, you know, I'd be on the right side of the street at the right time, and I would suddenly get struck with the understanding of how to do that, or the ability to do that. But now, meet my experience with love, I can't do that. That's what I always thought. But that's not what the Buddha teaches. You know, the Buddha teaches that we all can do that, and it's a skill. Not only does he tell us that it's a skill, but he tells us what the skill is. And it's a step-by-step skill. And if you follow these steps, you can meet your experience with love. It's a skill, he says, that everyone can learn. Really, it's the skill of being skillful, right? It's being skillful. What is it to be skillful? To act with intention informed by love and compassion. That's something he said you can do. You know, as he said, you know, this is something you can do. I wouldn't teach it to you if I didn't think you could do it. I wouldn't teach it to you if I didn't think it would be for your benefit. This is something you all can do. It's a skill. You know, so the skill entails, as the experiences of life unfold, to bring wisdom to those experiences. To say, well, this is the way of the world. To understand, to begin to connect to that truth that we know in the heart, that things are in process, that they're inconstant, and they're out of our control. So to assert that and begin to connect into the heart, because the heart knows. And then to meet our experience with love. Now again, you know, that's a skill. That's a skill. How do we do that? You know, oftentimes, when I teach this, and some of you have probably seen this interplay, I was teaching it a little while, a few weeks ago, in a class. I was teaching skillful intention, how to meet your experience with love. And I said to the class, how do you do that? How do you meet your experience with love? You know, and this has happened every time I've asked this question for the last 10 years. Nobody ever gets it right. Ever gets it right. How do you do that? Nobody knows. How do you do that? You know, it's a skill that most of us haven't ever been taught. We've never learned this skill. You know, and again, as I talked about last night, you know, so many of these things that are so important are actually very simple, are small things. You know, the skill, you know, is a very simple skill. At least the first time of it, part of it, it's very simple and very powerful. And partly, maybe that's the reason why people never get the answer, because it's so simple, and maybe it seems simplistic. We fabricate the intention. How do you meet your experience with love? You practice internal verbal fabrication. You say to yourself, let me meet this experience with love. Now, it's extraordinary what happens when we do that. I mean, I've had experience after experience after experience over the years in teaching and in giving these instructions, and people coming back and describing how extraordinary the results were. I remember, you know, I mean, I could go chapter and verse with stories. I remember one who was very poignant. This is going back probably 8, 9 years or whatever. Somebody in our group was struggling with one of her young children, you know, really having a hard time. And the kid was kind of difficult, and she was not relating to the kid in a very skillful way. So I said, look, you know, when you're with your kid, just pause, feel the breath, and say to yourself, let me relate to her with love. Student came back a week later. My relationship with my daughter has been transformed. Completely transformed just by doing that. You know, and then she said to me what most people say, how the hell did that happen? You know? It's that powerful. It's that powerful. You know, because what's happening when we're doing that is, first of all, we're replacing unskillful verbal fabrication. You know, maybe in the case of that person, it was like, you know, this kid is pissing me off. I can't handle this, whatever it is, right? Unskillful, you know, which in and of itself is an expression of suffering. You know, so just by changing that fabrication, you're mitigating your suffering. Just by changing that fabrication. I mean, your thinking is your expression of your suffering. You know, just by changing it, you mitigate your suffering. And that, then, of course, when we assert skillful fabrication, skillful thinking, let me talk to my kid with love, with compassion, you know, we're connecting into the heart. We're beginning to connect into the heart, because that's the way that we connect into the heart. You know, we use the head to connect into the heart. And the Buddha was very clear about that. He said, all that we are begins with our thoughts. All that we are begins with our thoughts. Think an unskillful thought, suffering will follow. Think a skillful thought, happiness will follow. All that we are begins with our thoughts. One of the primary tenets of the Buddha's teaching. He said, whatever a mother, father, or other kinsman, we're talking about a skillful mother or father, whatever a mother, father, or other kinsman might do for you, a well-directed mind can do for you even better. I mean, there's nothing that can help you more than, and I love the way that Tanjev translates that, you know, a well-directed mind. You're directing your mind to love. Let me meet this experience with love as you're sitting here right now. Let me sit here and listen to this Dharma talk with love. You see what happens when we do that? And maybe we're sitting here and I don't get it. What's he saying? My butt hurts. Change that fabrication. Let me be here with love in this moment. So we fabricate the intention, and then that leads us into connecting to the felt sense. And, you know, we shine the light of our awareness on that felt sense. And by shining the light of our awareness on a quality, that develops that quality. It's like the sun on the plants. Now, the thing of it is that love is there. You know, love is reliable, you know, as it says in the Christian scripture, you know, love never fails. You know, love is right there in the heart. It's part of the ever-present truth. It's dependable. Now, it's covered over by a lot of debris, you know, all the detritus of our, you know, our clinging and suffering and aversion and desire. It's like a garden with a lot of junk in it, you know. So a lot of the practice is clearing away that junk, but love is right there. Clear away all that junk, you know, you've got a beautiful garden. You know, we just have to tend to it. We have to turn to it, you know. So the love is there in the heart, you know, but we have to turn to it. We don't turn to it, you know, we turn to aversion and desire. So it's about turning in a different direction. The Buddha said it's about bending your mind in a different direction. Bending your mind. You know, and the more you bend your mind in that direction, your mind becomes bent in that direction. So we turn to the heart by using a skillful fabrication, and then that leading us into the felt sense, to turn to the heart. Now, sometimes when we try to do this, you know, we kind of sabotage ourselves. We cut off our connection to the heart. So this is something in terms of the skill. You know, and Tanjev actually includes this as part of the head part of it. When, if you read his teachings on this, sometimes we, you know, make that assertion, let me relate to this person with love. Let me be here in this moment. Let me relate to the fact that I lost the sock with love, you know. And then, you know, almost as quickly, another voice in the mind interposes itself and sabotages us. So it's really important as part of the skill to be heedful, just what we talked about last night. All skillfulness is rooted in being heedful. So you have to be heedful of that voice that goes, I don't deserve love, I'm unlovable. You know, love isn't part of my repertoire. You know, we have to be really heedful about that. See that as Mara, put that aside. You know, and we all have different ways that we kind of sabotage ourselves. I mean, one for me and for a lot of us is, I can't do this. I can't do this. You know, so be heedful of that. I don't have that quality. And there's a certain conceit in that, like, I don't have that quality of love, you know? It's like, you're the exception. You know, we all have that. You're not the exception. You know, so we assert right view. This is something I can do. What did the Buddha say? This is something you can do. I wouldn't teach it to you if you couldn't do it. And of course, as we talked about last night, maybe you just begin to start to get a little bit of that felt sense. You know, when you're fabricating, You know, you're making that pathway into the heart, and just the fabrication itself is you know very powerful, as I said. But when you start fabricating, let me meet this moment with love, you know, things are happening that you're not seeing. Just what I talked about last night. You know, you're paving that road to the heart. You know, you're opening that channel to the heart, and you're actually touching into it. But at first, it may be very subtle, and you're not feeling it. You know, so you know, and of course, it usually starts with just a little bit, good enough. You know, gradually the heart opens. You know, I've talked many times about, you know, one of the places where I lived when I was a kid, and you know, we had this rusty garage door, you know, that you couldn't open. You know, it would just open just a little bit, you know, and that's kind of the way our hearts are, you know. So it's going to be a practice of getting out that oil, you know, and gradually getting that door open. It's a gradual awakening. It's a gradual awakening of the heart. So can we meet the experiences of the retreat with metta? We don't know what's going to happen from moment to moment. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. You might walk in here for the Dharma talk. Oh, this is going to be fantastic. You know, and you sit down and you don't like the talk. You know? Or you sit down and your butt hurts. You know, and the whole time here, you know, it's like, this really sucks. I just want to get up, but he's going to get really pissed if I get up. You know, it's like, can you just meet that with love? We don't know what's going to happen, but we can meet whatever happens with love. All the experiences, all the ups and downs, the bends in the road, we can meet with love. You come to the retreat with the expectation that there's going to be grilled cheese, right? I mean, that grilled cheese is so good. And every day you go and it's like, no grilled cheese today. Can you meet that experience with love? You guys are laughing. I don't know if because it's funny or because it's true, because it's true, right? You know, it's like, and then you get towards Friday, it's like, oh my God, they're not going to have grilled cheese, you know? You know, or you are walking to the hall, to the dining room, and you just are really looking forward to having your own table. You know, it's like, I just want to be able to sit at a table that's meant for 10 and be the only person there. And I just want that expanse of wood to contemplate, you know, and you get there and the hall is filled and you've got to share that table with two other people, you know? Horror of horrors, right? So can you meet that experience with love? The practice isn't going your way, or the way that you'd hoped it to go, or the way that you'd expected it to go. Can you meet that with love? The practice turns in a way, you know, that road of the practice on this retreat turns in a direction that you didn't expect. Can you meet that with love? The sitting is a struggle. You have a sitting that's a real struggle. You know, can you meet that with love? You know, you come into the hall. You know, you're primed for some jhana. You know, you had a really good sitting the one before that, and you're just like, this is going to be it. I know it. This is going to be the sitting when I break through. You know, and it's like you're asleep the whole sitting, right? Right? You know, and of course, you know, part of the right view that you can assert will be, you know, there'll be sittings when I walk into the hall expecting there to be dullness, and I'll have jhana. Because that's the way it works, right? That's the way it is. You're out there walking, you know, you do 45 minutes of walking meditation and you realize, oh, I didn't feel one breath. You know, can you meet that experience with love? You run out of dental floss, you know, oh my God, this is a tragedy. Can you meet that experience with love? And you say, then you remember, oh, the managers have it in their kit. You know, but I gotta go talk to the manager. I really don't want to do that. Can you meet that experience with love? One of the things that begins to happen as we develop these skills, you know, and these are skills, as the more you do this, you begin to develop faith in your skill. And this is when things really become interesting and very powerful. You know, you develop faith in your skill. You begin to understand that you can meet the experiences of life, the experiences of retreat. You can meet these experiences skillfully because you have skills. When you're faced with pleasure and pain, gain and loss, status and disrepute, pleasure and praise and blame, you can meet those experiences because you have skills. So you come up against you know, the fluctuations in life, and you take a step back, you know, and you remember, oh, I have the skill. I have this skill. You know, when I come up against a difficult situation, sort of the first thing that runs through my mind is, oh my God, I'm going to get overwhelmed. I'm going to screw it up. But then I pull back and say, no, you have skills. You know, you have these skills that you've been developing. You know, and I start to get confidence. Oh yeah, I do. I do. Changes everything. Have faith in your skills. You know, it's like the athlete, you know, that performs at a high level, you know, that athlete has great faith in his or her skills. You know, that's what enables him or her to perform at a high level. Or the musician, you know, I was like, you know, because I'm not a musician, it's like, how does that person walk onto the stage at Carnegie Hall and play that piano? You know, how do they do that? Because they have confidence in their skills. You know, we look and we see these people, a great athlete at a high level, a musician, and it just seems so effortless, and they seem so confident. You know, they're so confident because they have faith in their skills. They've developed those skills over years and years and years of practice, and they have confidence in those skills. That's why they're so confident. That's where confidence comes from. Many years ago, I just felt compelled to talk about the Grateful Dead, but many years ago, Jerry Garcia, God bless him, when he was still alive, you know, who to me was somebody who always, you know, seemed so effortless with just a fluid skill, you know, just, I mean, you know, and somebody said, you know, Jerry, you know, you guys are supposed to be so altruistic, you know, why don't you donate, you know, most of your money to your fans? And Jerry said, you know, where were all my fans when I was practicing 17 hours a day? You know, it's like he didn't get to be that good sitting on his butt. He practiced 17 hours a day. So develop confidence in your skills. Remember, you have what it takes. You have what it takes. You have these skills that are dependable. You can count on them. Now, sometimes the experiences we meet are very difficult. Sometimes the experiences we meet on retreat are very difficult. Sometimes we experience suffering. You know, sometimes we experience suffering. Oftentimes we experience suffering on retreat and in life. You know, on retreat we experience the suffering, you know, we sometimes call the unavoidable suffering. You know, the pain. So we may have a lot of pain, or we may be sick. You know, we can have, you know, that's real suffering. Or we may walk into the dining room and they have polenta that night. You know, I mean, we're talking real suffering here. You know, and then of course we experience that suffering that's said to be avoidable, that suffering of our mental action, when we get caught in those rivers of aversion and desire and can't get out. You know, these karmic patterns emerge sometimes on a retreat and in life, and they're really strong. And sometimes on retreat they're really strong, you know, and we don't have the distractors to, you know, to help mollify the pain that we're feeling. So when we come up against suffering, meet suffering, the Buddha was really clear. We shift from metta, from meeting our experience with love, to meeting our experience with compassion, with this wish to be free from suffering, which is also right there in the heart, which is also reliable, which is also dependable. You know, typically, when we're suffering, the Buddha said, we become bewildered, we get flustered, you know, we get upset about the suffering, we suffer over the suffering, we try to run away from it, we try to fix it, we try to get rid of it. The Buddhist practice is quite different, right? It's not about getting rid of your suffering. It's about changing your relationship to it. It's about changing your relationship to it. So we center ourselves in the breath. We get a little bit of space, and we take the role of the observer. Oh, there's suffering. We bring in a little wisdom. This is the way it is in life. There's suffering in life. As a human being, I'm going to experience this suffering. I'm going to experience this suffering for the rest of my life at different times. Unless I become fully enlightened, then I'm still going to experience the unavoidable suffering of sickness, aging, and death. So we bring in that wisdom, and then we cultivate compassion. We apply the skill of compassion. From that place of being centered, we acknowledge that there's suffering. You know, we allow ourselves to open up to that truth. Yeah, this is really true. We allow ourselves just to kind of be with that. You know, the concentration allows us to do that. Now, an interesting thing happens when, instead of running from it, we sort of turn to it and open up to it. You know, we start to see, oh, I can be with this. You know, and of course, particularly if we've developed this ground in this center, you start to say, oh, I can be with this. Because what really, in many ways, is difficult for us about our suffering is we think it's going to overwhelm us. But when you take a step back from it, you know, grounded, and just look at it as the observer, you say, oh, I can handle this. You know, and often what we say is what? Not as bad as we thought it was, right? Because we make up so many stories about it. So we take a step back from it, bring in a little wisdom, and cultivate compassion. And again, that's the skill. It's the same skill. Fabrication. Let me have some compassion for myself. It could be that simple. Or compassion. You know, and the felt sense. The felt sense. You know, so this, again, is a skill. And it's a skill, you know, that's really important to develop, because there's going to be suffering in life, and we have to learn how to relate to it as opposed to turning away from it. You know, so it's a skill that we have to learn and practice, 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 because our minds are bent in the other direction. You know, the only way we're going to bend our minds towards love and compassion is by practice, practice, practice. You want to get up on that stage at Carnegie Hall? How do you get there? You know, and this is a great place to learn to practice compassion for yourself. You know, this is a great place. I mean, it's really where I learned to have compassion and to develop that skill. And of course, we practice and practice it. But, you know, retreats were always very difficult for me. You know, I always suffered a lot on retreats in my early years because, guess what? Things didn't go my way, you know, and I suffered, but I learned to have compassion. Usually when I was finally up against the wall and I tried everything else. But I learned to develop that skill of compassion, or that habit. We develop that habit of compassion. So here, when you're here, when there is suffering, cultivate compassion. Cultivate compassion. Use fabrication and connect into the heart. Beware of the ways that you sabotage yourself. You know, because that's part of the skill, just what we've talked about. I'm bad, I don't deserve it. You know? You know, when Mara is like that, you know, and Mara is like, you know, you don't deserve compassion. You don't deserve compassion. You don't deserve compassion. You know, oftentimes or sometimes what we have to do is be really strong. You know, Mara's a son of a bitch, you know? You know, if you just say, well, move to the side, Mara. You know, let me have some, you know. You have to, a lot of the times, apply strong compassion or fierce compassion. You know, I've told that story before when I was on a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock many years ago, and I was suffering. I had this pain in my back of my head, and I was suffering so much with it, and, you know, then it compounded with all this other suffering. You know, I remember it really vividly. It was the moment when I think I really made a breakthrough in terms of having compassion for myself. I was just suffering, and this was like 3 weeks of suffering, you know? And the end not in sight, you know, of the retreat or my suffering. And I was doing walking meditation. I was the only person upstairs at Spirit Rock doing walking meditation, you know? And I was suffering so much, and just, it just arose. Let me have some fucking compassion for myself. And it was so strong, and it was so true. You know, I gave a talk on it weeks later, called Fucking Compassion. You know, that's fierce compassion. When I was on that retreat at the Rock, as we like to call it. You know, and of course, one of the ways that we typically sabotage ourselves, or that unskill, the way Mara presents him or herself, is, you know, we begin to do the fabrication, we try to connect to the heart, and it's like, I don't feel anything, you know, and we get discouraged, you know. So be heedful of that movement of the mind that says, I don't feel anything, I can't feel anything, you know, because Mara is blocking the heart. You know, more than anything else, that's what's blocking the heart, are those ways, those unskillful ways that you're relating to your efforts to make and connect into the heart. You know, one of the things you can do is have compassion for yourself for not feeling the compassion. You don't feel it? Try to have compassion for yourself for that. Assert right view. This is a process. It's going to take time. I've been beating up on myself for the last fill-in-the-blank number of years. This is going to take time for the heart to open. A lifetime of karma. You know, sometimes I'm you know, moved when somebody says, I can't feel it, to go, duh, you know? Of course you can't feel it. All of a sudden, you're going to feel it, you know? But you will feel it as long as you don't sabotage your efforts to feel it by judging yourself and getting discouraged. Let's kind of end this talk with, we can do a little visualization, right? Okay, imagine it's your interview tomorrow, right? And everybody will have an interview tomorrow, and you're really having a hard time. You know, the practice is just not going the way that you want it to go. You haven't gotten even to step one, and you haven't even seen a hindrance. You're really in agony, you know. And you come into the room, and you sit down, and you tell me that. And I look at you, and I go, you're really fucked up. Yeah? How long have you been doing this practice? You think, you know, I can't waste my time with you anymore. You know, how many years has it been? You know, when are you ever going to get it? Jesus Christ, why don't you go home now? That's what we do to ourselves. You know, that's what we do to ourselves. That's what we do to ourselves. You know, when you come in and you're suffering, I see that right away. You know, and of course, it's very interesting as a Dharma teacher because you're connected to the Dharma so much. We talked about that when I did training with teachers over the years. You know, you're sort of in that space. When you come in, you know, it's like, I see your suffering and your pain, and you're like, I don't have any choice but to have compassion. I mean, it just goes right to the heart. I wish I could do that with myself, you know, because I do the same thing that you do. And that's what we do. And when we cultivate compassion, what happens? When we cultivate compassion, what happens? The mind heads straight. You know, the heart is attuned to compassion. And in those moments when we're suffering, and we cultivate compassion and we connect to compassion, in those moments when we connect, there's no aversion, there's no desire, there's no suffering. That's how you move towards the end of suffering. By cultivating compassion, connecting into that free and liberated heart. You know, when you do that, there's happiness. There's happiness. Compassion is the way out of suffering. You know, so learn the skill of compassion. Practice the skill of compassion. It's one of the most important skills you'll ever learn in your life. So let's just sit for a moment.